I've attended UUCL since its very first meeting in October 1991, I think it was. Then off and on again for the first 5 years, but pretty regularly since. So it's been a lot of years. And it's been an incredible experience, filled with change, both in the church and in myself. Now I'm leaving this church, moving to Colorado, and looking forward to the next phase of my life. But this church and this church community will always remain in my heart and my soul, and I thank all the people responsible for both the good things and the difficult things we have gone through, because all have led us to where we are today. I want to leave you with what I think is the most significant of the changes we have made over the last 25 years. As most of you, although there's an awful lot of new people and I forget that, but most of you are probably aware we purchased this building about 16 years ago after being a church in a box. Well, probably two or three boxes. We moved three times before coming here. From the second floor of the Loudoun Museum to Loudoun Valley Community Center to the old Loudoun Country Day School. The museum had no space for RE classes. The community center was too far west for most people. And the Loudoun Country Day School gym had all the atmosphere of, well, a gym, including a constant loud hum and a basketball. Kids couldn't resist shooting even in the middle of a sermon. Every Sunday in all these locations, we set up chairs. We put away chairs. We got out the hymnals. We boxed up the hymnals. We, well, mostly Dave Fries, hung out a sign and took in a sign. We made coffee in various pots in various ways. And I find it ironic, here today we don't have a closer, that it is so difficult to get volunteers to open and close here when we always manage to do all that work in our borrowed spaces. Just think if you had to do that. We just finally ran out of energy for this way of church and took a chance on this little building with its bowed northern wall, no bathroom, no heat, and a charming circular communion rail out here. 2 years later, after the pews were painted, the floor refinished, fans and lights hung, unnecessary walls torn out, a supporting beam put up in place in the basement, and a special septic system approved by the county, we were more than ready to leave the physical side of the church work behind us and take up the spiritual side, our real purpose for being here. We now had a building to do church in. How did we want to do it? Up to that point in our history, we had had an erratic worship experience, to put it nicely. Mostly lay-led for our first few years, followed by a couple of great years with an inspirational part-time ministerial student, a couple of years with a part-time minister, which led to our most difficult and almost fatal period. Then lay-led again. We hired any speaker we could find. Retired ministers, academics, musicians, acquaintances who were sure they had something valuable to say. Some were inspiring, like the reenactment of a slave auction that my daughter, as a, 13 years old, remembers to this day. It was done to make us understand what that was like, but as a way to understand also the legacy of that. Some were interesting, like the talk by the literature professor, father of one of our members, who talked about the spiritual meaning of fairy tales. Some were thoughtful book reports. And there were lots of ritual services to fill up those Sundays. Solstice, Solwyn, spring solstice. Christmas pageants, New Year's Day fire communions, Thanksgiving communions. And many of those services have become traditional with us today, and we repeat them every year. But the most popular one of them all was My Spiritual Journey, which was a desperate suggestion one week to fill a Sunday by recruiting two or three members who did not want to do a full service, but were willing to talk for a few minutes about their past religious experiences. An awful lot of the time, with the lack of a minister or enough willing speakers from our own congregation, we were treated to incoherent ramblings. Advocacy speeches for one movement or another, discussion groups, even a short play. Anybody here? A short play about masturbation. We reached rock bottom when a guest invited by a member saying this was going to be wonderful presented what I would have to call an exorcism. An exorcism to get Christianity out of our minds and belief systems because it was, according to her, the most evil thing in the world. And it caused all the problems in the world. We were giving little red cards to put on our refrigerators to remind us of this fact. And it was followed by a ceremony that included jumping through a hula hoop. And I don't remember why we jumped through the hula hoop. Something had to change. We knew we couldn't afford a minister. We'd spent all our money on the building. That was our choice. We looked for a course somewhere where we could go that would teach us how to write sermons and put on services. There was nothing. It was either go to school to be a minister or struggle. So a small worship committee decided to start from scratch. We researched what other churches did, what materials were available to help us. And in those days, there weren't many. And now that we're really into this sermon writing thing, there's more and more of them all the time, which is wonderful. As part of this activity, we decided we wanted to find out what people coming here were looking for. What motivated them to come to the church in the first place and then to stay through the good and the bad? So we designed a survey with, I don't remember how many, maybe 10 questions on it. And I only remember the first question. It asked, what is the most important element of church life to you? Why do you come to this church? Some of the answers to pick from on this survey that I recall were spiritual growth, religious education for my children, which was just referred to, community, social justice activities. And there were some others I don't remember, and I don't even know what happened to that survey. Now, I don't think that this was a very difficult question or provocative question, especially since I knew the answer, what it was going to be. I knew. Think for a minute right now, all of you, so many new to the church. What would be your answer to that question? Why did you come here? And why have you come back, if you've come back a number of times? When we tabulated the responses to this survey, it turned out I didn't know the answer. The spiritual growth and transformation choice was not the one selected as I expected, not by a long shot. And neither was religious education for my children, even though most families state that's the reason for seeking a church. No, it was community. Community. I didn't understand. I was baffled. And since I will probably never see any of you again, I will apologize now if I offend you when I share exactly what I did think. With a puzzled look on my mental face, I asked myself, did everyone sitting around me on Sunday come here looking for a place to socialize, Looking for a club like the Jammers or the Book Club? Hoping for a lot of potlucks? Gossiping over coffee? My belief 16 years ago was that people went to church for the worship experience. The church is a place for growing a soul, as the famous UU minister A. Powell Davis said. And UUs talk frequently about how each of us is on our own personal spiritual journey. I was pretty sure I practiced my religion that way. Every Sunday, listening to the wise words, when it wasn't the rambling ones, new ideas, challenges from the pulpit, all seen and heard from the point of view of my personal beliefs and experiences. And I believed everyone else sitting out there did the same thing. Shoot! Every fall, the worship committee spends at least one whole meeting scheduling 3 services for the pagan's personal journey, a couple of services for the humanist spirituality, if they have any, a service for the Buddhists, 2 services for the environmentalists, and every other year, a service for the Christians among us. A current UU minister who grew up a Muslim described how she felt when she was first a UU. I fell in love with being an individual in a faith community. I was like a kid in a candy store. Me, me, me. My faith, my journey, my religion. It's all about me. Okay? So this answer, community, which I still considered the wrong answer, didn't match that to me with what Unitarian Universalist traditionally was known for was individualism. This emphasis on individualism grew from the 19th century, from Emerson and the Transcendentalists. Emerson's given the blame for our emphasis on the individual because of his advocacy of self-reliance. Nothing is at last sacred but the integrity of your own mind. In my years as a UU, going back to my teens, I have associated Unitarian Universalism with individualism, freedom of thought, and self-reliance. That's us. And those were the words that most then would have used as part of their elevator speeches. But we also are, as our kids say, the Church of the Open Mind. And we have bumper stickers that say, question everything. So spurred on by the survey answer, on and off for many years, believe me, this comes back to my mind. And I have tried to reconcile the dichotomy of individualism and community in our religion. Why was that the answer selected then? And I'm pretty sure would be the answer that would be selected now. I even read a reference to Unitarian Universalism recently, calling it the I Church, where the individual is the center of the universe. Often one person can block the community's processes and reset the community's agenda because the community doesn't want to compromise the freedom of the individual. Even one member and force their opinion and behavior on the group. Looking back, we have had some experiences of this kind happening in here. Very early, there almost was not a UUCL. We had a disagreement, which I witnessed that day and did not even know we had the disagreement, about the Persian Gulf War. So that's a long time ago when we first began. I don't remember the words that were spoken that offended an individual who knew he had the right views on the war. And someone that spoke up saying, no, I don't think we should do that, greatly offended him. He said, we should all support this. And he left the church. It was a difficult struggle for us to add ritual and use words in our services like prayer, even if we do it occasionally. Why? Because there were those who would be offended and leave the church. It had to be anti-ritual, the old way. And at least one person came up to me. I did do a service on ritual where I was saying, yeah, I'm kind of liking it. Came up to me afterwards and said, gave me a piece of his mind, actually, about how ritual doesn't belong in a UU church. And if it can't be his way, it would be no way. Which brings us back to community. What brings people to church in the first place? We did not ask the question in the first survey, which may have explained the answer of community. We weren't deep enough with our question. Most, and I am going to say all of us, including myself, came here seeking connection, seeking a sense of belonging. And since babyhood, we've learned that belonging feels safe and good, and so we seek it out later in life. Our current UU president, Peter Morales, wrote in a sermon titled A Religion for Our Time, "People visiting our churches are most often seeking relationship, connection, a sense of belonging, community. They want all of this, and yet the central spiritual longing is for connection, for real community." What's the supreme irony, he said? We who have smartphones and instant messages and tweets and email and voicemail and zillions of friends on Facebook, we are, by objective measure, the most emotionally isolated beings who have ever lived on this planet. We exchange more messages than ever at the price of true intimacy and real community. We human beings are wired to need one another. Fortunately, there is hope, he said. And community is that hope. Building a community takes a lot of intention, a lot of patience. It takes a lot of meetings. When people share honestly and hear others share honestly and connect with each other in a trusting relationship, an authentic religious community evolves. Without authentic community and connection, ordinary people cannot and will not share what is important to them. Without connection and community, ordinary people cannot share their joys and their successes or their sorrows and their burdens with others. In the covenanted community, such as ours, individualism is replaced by individuality. We are still each an individual with our own beliefs and needs, but there is something greater, the community. The community we create with each other supports us, transforms us, allows each of us to be whole and broken, allows each of us to make mistakes and be forgiven. It provides mercy and love simply because we are human beings walking this earth together. Not because we deserve it, not because we have earned it, but simply because we believe in the promise of humanity together, we would be one. The Jewish rabbi Martin Buber wrote, "The nature of true community, of a strong and vital religious community, is the story of welcoming and of radical hospitality." Religion is not an intellectual exercise. It is about encountering the holy as we move through our lives, encountering the spark of divinity through relationship, and responding to the hopes and dreams that we truly share. How do we build and sustain this kind of community? A non-Unitarian Universalist professor of sociology decided to do a study of a Unitarian congregation. She concluded that to the degree that we do accomplish community and uphold individuality is through our rituals and our rhetoric. She observed that the worship service using symbols such as the flaming chalice, reciting our covenant, sharing joys and concerns, time for all ages, songs that reflect our values. And every song I picked today was because they meant so much to me about the values in this community. The sermon, she says, even morning coffee and the announcements foster a sense of common identity while respecting the individual. But even more important to our sense of community is the rhetoric we use, of which she identified two kinds, positive and negative. Our positive rhetoric focuses on our seven principles and commitment to welcoming a richness of diversity in theology, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and age. Our negative rhetoric focuses on how both society and we fall short of our values. I think her description of that community, whichever one she picked, could have been us. I think it fits us to a T. We have made deliberate efforts in the last 10 years or so to put these things in place that she talks about that strengthens our community and serves each individual. These things need to be sustained and given loving care. I see them as having made a change in this community. And I have learned that community does involve the potlucks, the small groups that gather around a shared interest or purpose, like the Green Team, the book clubs, the TED Talk discussions, the art on the walls, the music, and especially the caring. It is in these that we truly connect with each other, as well as take another step in our own spiritual journey. However, as we all know too well, the church is a human institution, and it can become all too human. I have many bad memories of our frailty in the past, my frailty in the past as part of the church. My hope for you, UCL, is that in spite of its shortcomings, this church, which has come such a long way in recent years, building a loving community, will have the resources to accept each other's imperfections, to reconcile differences, to forgive and be forgiven, to comfort and to be comforted, and to love and be loved. That is what the church is all about, because that is what life is all about. Through the good times and the bad times too, let it be a dance you do here in this community. Blessed be. I invite you to stand for hymn number 311, Let It Be a Dance.